Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, February 2nd. I'm Gage Andrus, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Bone called out on hostile sexist comment. COVID cases decline locally and nationally. And Creekside Cabins update. Stay tuned. News on these stories and more coming right up. A front moving across the area is expected to bring gusty winds, especially along the north coast.
Well, my name is Scott Carroll. I'm a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Eureka. Yeah, it looks like we've got rain coming back into the picture over the next week or so. But it looks like we're expecting just mostly beneficial rain with the next few storm systems. The rain that's coming in late tonight and on Friday looks like it's going to be very light, probably just a couple of tenths of an inch of rain at best across most of the area. We've got another batch of rain coming in Saturday night and lingering into Sunday, and that's going to bring a little bit more rainfall to the area, probably on the order of about half an inch or so. And then it looks like another round of rainfall enters the picture late Tuesday night into Wednesday. And that looks like that may end up being the wettest rainmaker with about maybe 3/4 of an inch or so of rainfall. So it looks like over the next week, somewhere between about an inch and a half and 2 inches of rain spread across three systems with a couple of breaks in between. There's just a slight chance of thunderstorms with that weather system that's going to be impacting the north coast on Sunday. And it does look like we're going to get a little bit of wind with these, especially this first system, tonight and during the day Friday, and that will probably linger off and on into Saturday. I don't think we're going to see winds near what we've seen over the past month or so with some of these storm systems, but we do have a wind advisory for some of the higher elevations as we get in later tonight and into tomorrow, and so there will be some gusty winds, and you know, it could blow around some loose items, maybe down some branches. I don't think it's going to affect many trees unless they're already weak or their roots are compromised or anything like that. So it's mainly just nuisance, minor wind damage, or just blowing things around.
An inmate at Eel River Conservation Camp in Redway fled authorities Wednesday evening and has since been taken into custody. Yesterday evening, California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation was seeking Randy Heldstab, who walked away from Eel River Conservation Camp in Redway on Wednesday, February 1st. Heldstab, 39, was last seen at 7:15 p.m. at the camp located near the Dean Creek area. Today, it was announced that Randy Heldstab was taken into custody by the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Office in Patterson. Staff will transport him to the Sierra Conservation Camp, SCC, in Jamestown. He will be ineligible to participate in the fire camp program, and his case will be referred to the local district attorney's office for consideration of escape charges. Heldstab is from Stanislaus County and was initially arrested in 2022, serving a sentence for possession of a firearm, buying/receiving stolen vehicle/trailer/construction equipment, controlled substance in prison/jail, and manufacture/sale/possession of a short barrel shotgun or rifle. However, he was scheduled to be released from CDCR custody in 2024. This recent escape will likely delay his release. Since 1977, 99% of all people who had left conservation camp or community-based program without permission have been apprehended. A Humboldt County supervisor, who's known for making inappropriate comments, has done it again, this time in front of the audience. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County Supervisor Rex Bone's tendency to offend has gotten him in trouble again, this time with what's described as a comment expressing, quote, hostile sexism at a well-attended fundraiser. Trouble was clearly afoot when the January 31st Board of Supervisors meeting began with a short and somewhat dismissive apology by Bone. After pointing out that the offensive comment was made as he performed his, quote, 742nd auction, Bone said, quote, it's been brought to my attention that he, quote, said something that was inappropriate. He apologized and said he acknowledges it, and the board moved on. Coincidentally, the agenda included a presentation on the county's efforts to effect organizational change, supporting social and cultural sensitivity. After a staff presentation on it, Supervisor Natalie Arroyo described how Bone's behavior at a Eureka fundraiser clashed with the culture change concept. Then she read a statement from Humboldt Hill resident Layla Roberts, who was at the auction event and was one of many people described as being surprised and offended.
I saw disgust, confusion, stunned silence among some audience members who heard the comment. A few laughed uncomfortably. This event was a triumphant and joyful return to in-person celebration for an organization also led by one of our community's most extraordinary woman leaders. How can Mr. Bone have taken this as an opportunity to demean one of the event's donors? This business owner, no one will be surprised to hear, is a woman. Her business is one of our county's leading lights. They run a great shop, are deeply generous, and are well-loved and respected. They've made it through some very challenging ups and downs and continue to thrive as a major employer and taxpayer. But their success apparently doesn't protect them from casual public and sexist contempt. Protecting them can be our job, which is why I'm writing to you to ask that you'll read my comments into the record during tomorrow's discussion about the county's workplace culture, titled Introduction of Workplace 2030, a Comprehensive Organizational Development and Culture Change Initiative. I'm very sorry my schedule doesn't allow me to join live. I want Mr. Bone held to the same standard of accountability as any executive or public servant. Body humor can be fun in private amongst close friends, delivered in a way that no one is demeaned. What Mr. Bone did, however, was a classic expression of hostile sexism. It's not funny, nor is it a small glitch. Disparaging humor is a classic strategy to delegitimize, devalue, and dehumanize a member of another group.
Arroyo didn't name the event, which was the Eureka Chamber of Commerce's annual fundraiser and member awards gala 3 nights before, or detail what Bone had said. As reported by the North Coast Journal, Bone was auctioning off a dinner at a well-known local restaurant and coaxed high bids by saying they'll encourage the eatery's female owner to serve the meals topless. Arroyo said it's a trespass that needs to be reckoned with.
The statement that was made was quite egregious, and it was made at a very large public event. So I think a more comprehensive response is warranted towards prevention. And so the commenters said this, and a number of people who've reached out to me asked what we can do towards preventing this from happening again. An apology is helpful, is the first step, but recently read a great article about how to apologize effectively, and it included saying explicitly what will be different in the future. And so, you know, I do want to say that I appreciate all of my peers here for being generous, hardworking, and caring deeply about our community, and that has never been in question. And this issue is independent of other good works. So you may do great things, we all might do great things, but I think we as a board need to not put this process on our staff to kind of hold us accountable. And I think we're going to have to wrestle in the near future with how to handle this.
Bone's brash style has gotten him in trouble before. In 2019, he was overheard asking the donor of a Mexican meal if the effects of its authenticity would include an urge to, quote, steal hubcaps. And Board Chair Steve Madrone got criticism 2 years ago when he used the term Oriental, which is considered racist. But Madrone's apologies for it was in-depth, explaining why the use of the term is offensive and describing his use of it as a sign of ignorance. He reflected on the experience.
I'll just use myself as an example here. I think that's a good way to go. You know, one of the first things is to actually become aware or made aware of the issue or the behavior that I might be exemplifying or doing that isn't appropriate or could change. You know, that's the first step, is just to even become aware, I think. And then, you know, an apology might be necessary. I made one when I made the faux pas of using a term that was inappropriate a year or two ago, and I didn't know, but it doesn't matter. I needed to do better once I became aware of it. But actually, the apology is really just kind of the first step, because then ultimately I have to really embrace the change in my behavior that is necessary. And if I just apologize and I don't embrace that change, then I don't think I'm going to change. I'll probably keep doing it, you know, over and over again. And so seeking help, you know, we all need help to be able to make the change.
Following Arroyo's commentary, Supervisor Mike Wilson described it as courageous, and he thanked her for calling out Bone's behavior. Bone didn't respond and joined a unanimous vote in support of the county's organizational culture change program. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Turning to Mendocino, if they're stuck, they're stuck, Sarah Reith reports.
Life after Creekside Cabins has begun for former residents of the campground that was declared a public health menace on January 21st, weeks after a sinkhole in the driveway made it impossible to drive off the property. A temporary bridge allowed for a brief evacuation last week, but the majority of trailers, vehicles, and belongings were abandoned. Danila Sands, director of United Disaster Relief of Northern California, gave an update yesterday afternoon after spending hours on the phone trying to get a tow for an SUV and a trailer belonging to a displaced family of eight. She did not succeed, and last night she learned that the SUV had been stolen.
So a majority has been relocated to Mendocino Redwoods in RV. The county has assisted with 30-day free space rental for folks there, and Mendocino Redwoods RV folks have been really kind. But there are some that are still stranded on the side of the road. There's a couple that are still sleeping in their cars. There are some that are being put up in a hotel by Good Samaritans that live in Willits. And then we have a grant that has put at least four people in a hotel here in Ukiah.
And that sounds like a lot of temporary solutions. Do you have any idea what's next?
So we're working with them, talking about chipping away every day on some type of a plan for the next step. If you want a rental, let's put in the rental applications. If you need assistance with getting your vehicle registered so you can legally be at a park long term, let's work with our partners, North Coast Opportunities, and see if your vehicle can be registered. You know, what are these next steps so that we're not in the same chaos that we were in last week at the last minute?
And there are 25 trailers that were abandoned at Creekside and 21 vehicles. Do you have a sense of how many of those trailers were being inhabited or were already just kind of being used for storage? Like, how many people's homes are behind the sinkhole?
Right. So out of that 25, about 8 to 10 were abandoned and they were unoccupied. They were empty. There is a few that the people, one in particular, the lady was in the hospital before the sinkhole. So that's just sitting there. One gentleman could not get his pop-up back in, and the bridge was too narrow, 102, 107 inches, with 4 feet railing. So, you know, a motorhome, and even on the highway, it wouldn't have worked out. These pop-ups have been extended for quite some time as permanent residency. So to have hours to try to maneuver this pop-up to get it back in, it didn't work, unfortunately, for one of our families. The other family with a child, they also got stuck behind because they didn't realize that we advocated and with other people to get them that extra hour on Friday morning. So come 5 o'clock Thursday the night before, they thought, well, that's it, you know. And then another lady staying back with dogs. They have nowhere to bring them. You know, Mendocino Redwoods will not take certain types of animals. Of course, the insurance, that's out of their hands. And some rentals will not take a certain amount of dogs or cats. So, you know, there's different situations. As far as we know, it's between the property owner and the state to decide on the next plans on that culvert being fixed. We have not heard any indication of getting fixed anytime soon. They said it could be as early as, you know, 6 months before anything started. There is really no other way in and out of there unless you had some large equipment like a backhoe to get through some backwoods and get okayed through a property owner. There's really no proper way to get any other trailers out right now. So if they're stuck, they're stuck.
I know we kind of touched on FEMA last time we talked on Friday, but this seems like kind of a classic example of natural disaster, maybe due to climate change, maybe just due to the aging infrastructure in California, but it's not the only sinkhole that's opened up across the state, and it always seems like the people who are already just kind of barely making it are the ones who get hit the hardest.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a little red tape here and there in regards to responsibility. You know, we all wish there's this big pot of money to solve, you know, all the world problems. Unfortunately, like the calls we get here, if the sinkhole's on private property, it's the property owner's responsibility, and insurance is not going to cover most of those situations. If a sinkhole is on a highway, that can get fixed almost immediately. You know, a sinkhole in the city limits, maybe that would even get fixed almost immediately. This one, Creekside, was a little bit more tricky because it was next to 101 and there's waterway involved.
What kind of help do you need so that you can help people more?
It's been nice. We've had three people turn in volunteer applications in this week. We really try to match the volunteer up with the task and skill that they want to do and they feel comfortable with and that we feel comfortable with them doing. So, you know, getting a volunteer application, even an hour a week, an hour a month. I had a lady today drive by and just do a drive-by and donate a $100 bill, you know, and that went, and she said, I want this to help people at Creekside. You know, we actually have an actual needs list. We have several people that need trailer propane heaters, the trailers that have been evacuated out of there. I think it got, what, 10, 15 degrees last night? So that was almost unbearable for some. I can't personally do that type of a temperature. So these people, they need continued support. And if not this disaster, we have several house fires throughout the year. And then we have fire season again coming up. You know, people knowing that we need to save this disaster resource center, we're boots on the ground. We're right there in the beginning all the way to the end of the people's recovery.
For KZYX News, I'm Sarah Wright. For all our local news with photos and more, visit kzyx.org.
While deaths from COVID remain at 500 a day nationally, California has seen significant improvements in the case rate and hospitalization numbers. The death rate is down significantly, but sadly, the 7-day average is still 20 per day in California alone. Kelly Lincoln brings us more details.
Let's take a quick look at the current trend of the COVID pandemic by the numbers. Thus far in the United States, 1.11 million Americans have died of the pandemic so far. At the national level, The New York Times summarizes the trends as follows. Hospitalizations and reported cases are decreasing in all but a few states and territories. At the national level, both figures are down by about 25% over the last 2 weeks. Mountain states are faring particularly well, with states like Montana and Utah seeing some of their lowest ever case and hospitalization rates. Death rates have not seen the same improvement. The average number of daily deaths has remained at or above 500 per day for most of January, a troublingly high figure that is about double the number of daily deaths typically seen in a bad flu season. The states and territories with the largest test positivity rates currently are Missouri, South Dakota, Oklahoma, Puerto Rico, Tennessee, Mississippi, Virginia, Florida, North Dakota, and Alaska. In California, the New York Times summarized the trends, writing, an average of 3,500 cases a day are reported in California over the last week. Cases have decreased by 45% from the average 2 weeks ago. Deaths have decreased by 23%. Since the beginning of the pandemic, at least one in 386 Californians have died from coronavirus, for a total of just over 102,000 California deaths from COVID. January of last year, 2022, was the month with the highest average cases per day, but January of the year before, 2021, was the month with the highest average deaths in California. Whether because of differences in the strains, access to treatments, or availability of vaccines, The number of people dying of COVID has dropped dramatically, from a high of 700 deaths a day in January of 2021 to the still astonishing rate of about 20 per day currently. Hospitalization rates are down in California. They're down 81% in Humboldt County and 73% in Mendocino County. In Humboldt County, about 4 new cases have been reported on average over the last 7 days, while 167 people in Humboldt County have died of COVID-19 since the pandemic began. No one has died of COVID in Humboldt since December. The test positivity rate is the number of tests that are positive in all that are taken by a testing site or physician in a specific period of time. About 51 tests a day have been logged over the last 7 days in Humboldt County. 5% have been positive. 7 people are currently in Humboldt County hospitals with COVID-19, and there are no available ICU beds at this time. In Mendocino County, about 70 people have been requesting COVID tests over the last 7 days, and the test positivity rate is also about 5%, or 1 in 20. Mendocino County Public Health has reported an average of 3 new cases a day over the last 7 days. There have been 139 confirmed COVID deaths in Mendocino County since the beginning of the pandemic, but no one has died from COVID since the first of the year. There are 3 people with COVID in their hospitals, and there is 1 ICU bed available. Trinity County has only 1 small hospital, so their hospital data mixes into other regional hospitals. However, 25 COVID tests have been logged on average over the last 7 days, and the test positivity rate has been 8.3%, or nearly 1 in 10. 57 Trinity County residents have died of COVID, but none since November. Turning to the impacts of long COVID, in August of last year, the Brookings Institute reported on COVID's impact to the workforce. They wrote that using a longitudinal survey, a Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis study found that 24.1% of people who contracted COVID-19 experienced symptoms for 3 months or more. And according to the Center for Disease Control, about 70% of Americans had contracted COVID-19 by that time. They concluded, if 24% of them have long COVID, there are 34 million working-age Americans who at some point have had long COVID. Nonetheless, the Omicron variants do not have a very high likelihood of developing into the cytokine storms that were so deadly during the Delta variant phase of the pandemic in 2021. At this time, the most common symptoms of COVID are a sore throat, runny nose, sneezing, new or worsening cough, fever, chills, fatigue or weakness, abdominal pain, diarrhea, and vomiting, and feeling very unwell. In California statewide, the fatality rate continues to be the highest in people greater than 70 years of age and impacts unvaccinated people at 3 times the rate as those who are vaccinated. However, the death rates in both groups have fallen significantly. Currently, 1 person in 2 million who are vaccinated dies from COVID-19, while the current mortality rate for their unvaccinated peers is about 3 in 2 million. And this is Kelly Lincoln reporting for KMUD News.
In state news, California lawmakers vow to pass concealed gun legislation to comply with Supreme Court ruling. Christopher Martinez reports.
In the wake of the recent surge in mass shootings, debates over gun safety laws are spreading. In Sacramento, Democratic State Senator Anthony Portantino of Burbank introduced Senate Bill 2, a measure to strengthen California's concealed weapon permit laws.
It strengthens our state, and here's why. It ensures those carrying firearms in public are responsible, law-abiding citizens. That's important. We're not taking someone's Second Amendment away. We're ensuring that the Second Amendment is properly applicable to people who warrant getting a concealed carry permit. It protects children and young adults from gun violence by setting them a minimum age requirement to 21. You have to be 25 to rent a car.
Portantino's bill would identify certain places where concealed guns are prohibited, like preschools, churches, and hospitals. Other officials and advocates joined Portantino for the announcement, as did Governor Gavin Newsom, who seems confident the bill will pass.
I will be signing this legislation. I don't think that. I know that.
The measure was crafted to withstand near certain legal challenges, given the recent Supreme Court decision that overturned a century-old New York concealed gun law. Supporters say they want the bill to serve as an example to other states and to the nation. State Attorney General Rob Bonta says the feds must do their part.
And it's easy. Do what California is doing. Simple. We have the blueprint. Copy it. You don't need to recreate anything. We've done it. But while we wait for them to do more to keep Californians and Americans safe, we're going to act.
Even as the Californians were criticizing inaction in Washington, there was a debate in Congress on gun safety rules in, of all places, the House Natural Resources Committee. That's a committee that normally deals with things like parks, fisheries, mining, and energy. But at its organizational meeting, Democrats tried to restore a rule banning committee members and staff from bringing weapons to the hearing room. Democrat Jared Huffman of California proposed the amendment, saying too many members had incited political violence, tried to bring guns onto the House floor, and cheered the removal of magnetometers used to find hidden guns.
They have openly fetishized guns and violence to the point where one of my colleagues across the aisle was removed from their committee assignments for portraying himself killing another member who sits on this very same committee. Again, unfortunate, uncomfortable, but true that many members of this body were neck deep in the January 6th insurrection, inspiring it, aiding, abetting, cheering, and after the fact, gaslighting about what it even was. This amendment is sadly necessary.
Republican Committee Chair Bruce Westerman of Arkansas said the amendment was unnecessary.
And as I said last Congress, one day Republicans will be in the majority and set the rules. That day has come.
Other Republicans spoke against the amendment, sometimes speaking out of turn.
Do you think we're going to hurt you? We would never hurt you. I would use my farm to defend you, just to be clear.
At one point, Huffman asked how many members feel the need to bring a weapon into hearings, drawing an answer from Colorado Republican Lauren Boebert.
Got one? I feel I need one everywhere here. There everywhere? Oftentimes we are harassed in the hallways. We walk alone.
The gentleman hasn't yielded.
And just would those be loaded weapons, presumably?
Not an unloaded weapon.
Okay, that's helpful to know, too.
Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez spoke in favor of the amendment, drawing an angry response from the House Speaker, California Republican Kevin McCarthy.
I just wonder if the gentleman from California or the gentlelady from New York has reason to believe that there is a homicidal maniac amongst us. If they do, they probably would have brought a gun into this room, whether or not there is a law. And I would challenge them right now to present their evidence, name the names, and present the evidence before such a catastrophe confronts us.
In the end, the amendment failed. But elsewhere at the Capitol, there was a more bipartisan discussion of gun issues. Two lawmakers held a news conference Wednesday announcing they're reintroducing another gun safety measure. Brian Fitzpatrick is a Republican from Pennsylvania.
And I'm proud to introduce, along with Mike, the Bipartisan Background Checks Act because of the impact of gun violence. It knows no political party and no political persuasion.
The Bipartisan Background Check Act aims to close loopholes that let about 1 in 5 gun sales go forward without background checks. Democrat Mike Thompson of California says he's introduced the measure in every congressional session since the Sandy Hook school shooting a decade ago.
The only corner in America where background checks are not bipartisan is over on the floor of the United States Senate. And we want to make sure we change that this year.
Passing new gun legislation in the majority Republican House might not be easy. Even in California, the predecessor of the concealed gun bill failed last year. But Howard University student and activist Mariah Cooley with the group March for Our Lives is not deterred.
But if the last 5 years make anything clear, it's that young people will step up if our leaders don't. We will protest in the streets, vote in the polls, and run against tired and old leadership and win. If that's what it takes to keep us safe, then we're going to keep fighting.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our engineer, D-Dog, and thank you for our reporters, Lauren Schmidt, Daniel Mintz, Kelly Lincoln, Sarah Reith, and Christopher Martinez. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Gage Andrus, South Fork High School journalism intern.